We were briefing about meditation related sutta, that is Anapanasati Sutta, available in Majjhima Nikaya, which actually have so many instructions about meditation, particularly related to Anapanasati. So they are actually Buddha explains Anapanasati in a way to fulfill Kayanupassana, the mindfulness related to the body, and then Vedanupassana, how to fulfill using Anapanasati, then how to fulfill Chittanupassana, that is mindfulness related to the mind, and how to fulfill Dhammanupassana, that is the mental states using Anapanasati. So this sutta in a way is a very specific sutta, very interesting sutta, where Buddha introduces Anapanasati in a way to fulfill all four foundations of mindfulness. So typically, if you know Satipatthana Sutta, where different techniques are mentioned, and not only Anapanasati. Anapanasati is just one part of Kayanupassana. But Anapanasati itself can be utilized to fulfill all four Satipatthanas, and then in a way to fulfill seven bhujangas, enlightenment factors, and ultimately to improve insights, to come across insights, and then the wisdom, basically the wisdom and the freedom. So therefore, this Anapanasati Sutta is a very beautiful sutta, and particularly used in meditation circles. So we were discussing this sutta for a couple of sessions now, and the first four steps, actually Buddha introduces it in 16 steps. The first four steps are related to Kayanupassana. How one can improve Kayanupassana using various facets of the breath. Just to recap what we did. So Buddha starts in a very simple way from where we can begin. He simply asks us to sit in a comfortable position and to find a suitable place, kind of a quiet place, a secluded place, free from various disturbances. And then sit in an erect position. Keep your back straight, body straight. And then establish mindfulness at the nostril. So basically this area, you can keep your attention. So that is the basic instructions, basic posture related instructions. Actually, adjusting your posture is extremely important, because otherwise what happens is if you are not well adjusted, if you couldn't find the best posture, then in between your session you may have to adjust your posture. That for a beginner is kind of a obstacle, because beginner wants kind of a most comfortable, most conducive environment. But in between, if you have to adjust your posture, change your posture, then you are disrupting your ongoing growth of mindfulness. Therefore, finding the best posture is key role, key point. So that is mentioned by the Buddha. And once you sit comfortably, actually that doesn't mean that you always have to sit cross-legged and you have to maintain a sort of a lotus posture every time. If you can do it, that's the best. But even you can do it while leaning onto chair, as right now most of us are doing. And then Buddha simply asks us to establish mindfulness on breath. That's it. Say, when breathing in happens, just know, now breathing in going on. When breathing out happens, just know, now it is the breathing out. So we are not artificially breathing. We are not forcefully breathing. So for a beginner, even finding out this balance is difficult, because the very moment we start to be aware of our breathing, it's like we are interfering breathing. We are like sort of forcing the breathing, forced breathing. So these are natural sort of obstacles, some issues that we come across at our beginning stages. it's very common to everyone. So you don't need to worry about these problems, but simply enjoy them. I mean, these are kind of a learning process, but different obstacles are there. So we slowly can overcome them. So even if you feel that you are doing sort of forced breathing, so you simply continue your practice. Later you will understand how to sort of calm down. And there are various techniques to calm down yourself and to establish the sort of normal, soothing kind of breathing. So if you feel you are really tired, after meditation, that indicates that you have sort of controlled your breathing. But if you simply let it happen, if you let the body to breathe naturally, then you feel comfortable at the end of the session. You feel more relaxed, more calm, more peaceful, more sort of blissful at the end of the session if you let the breathing happen naturally. And then simply, Buddha says as the first step, sato vasa sati, sato pasa sati, just be aware now you are breathing in, just be aware now you are breathing out. So it's a very ordinary process. So this is where, I mean, we don't expect any kind of miracles in meditation, any kind of extraordinary experiences, rather appreciate this simplicity. Appreciate this ground-to-earth sort of phenomena. Yeah, we are appreciating this whole living body. The breathing is a kind of a living experience, which is essential for our continuation. So we are sort of allowing the body to breathe naturally, and we encourage that. We simply appreciate that process. Say you can little bit add kind of a value to it, simply like I said during the guided sitting. As you're breathing in, you can feel that you are energizing yourself, you are nourishing yourself, you are getting the energy from outside, from the environment to yourself. Kind of a such kind of feeling will give you some kind of sort of positive environment. And as you breathe out, just like whatever the pressure, whatever the tension, stresses, and all issues you had in your mind, you let it go with the out breath. You are all releasing all that pressure, all that issues, tensions, whatever it is available in your mind, you are releasing. You are simply calming down. You are simply letting go. Breathing in, you are nourishing yourself. Breathing out, you are releasing all the stresses, releasing all the tensions. So likewise, you can add a little bit of value to the breathing process. So simply being aware of breathing in, breathing out. Then Buddha asks us to go for the next session, next state, that is to know sort of the distinguished characteristics in in-breath and out-breath. Whether in-breath is longer, whether out-breath is shorter, whether in-breath is cooler, out-breath is warmer. Whether in-breath happens on a particular nostril, out-breath happens in another nostril. So likewise, there may be slight differences. So now you are sort of collecting your mind at the nostril and you are well aware, okay, the in-breath is happening and it is happening only on left nostril. Just I am giving an example. And maybe out-breath happens. It may happen using both nostrils. I'm just giving an example. And likewise, you can even find out these slight differences. In-breath is not exactly like out-breath. There may be slight differences. You try to recognize all these differences. So that sort of focuses your attention. So you are giving some sort of curiosity to the process. You need to sort of apply this curiosity to this whole process rather than just allowing breathing to happen. You have to add this information, sort of, you have to get this information. Is it the in-breath warmer, in-breath cooler, or is it happening in both nostrils or only using a single nostril? If it is a single nostril, is it the left one or right one? So likewise, just be a little curious about what is really going on. But stay always at the nostril. Don't follow the breath inside and don't follow the breath outside. Your working place is at the nostril. Your kammatthana, the working place is at the nostril. And then Buddha asked us to even see the differences between two consecutive in-breaths. and two consecutive outbreaks. Now you can understand Buddha is sort of taking us a little more sharper, a little more subtler levels to refine mindfulness. So this breathing as a meditation object has the beauty where the object itself is evolving in a way to refine mindfulness, in a way to sharpen mindfulness. So you don't need to introduce a different technique to sharpen your mindfulness, but rather the breath itself will evolve in a way to sharpen mindfulness. So that's the beauty of this meditation object. And now give a challenge to the mind, telling whether the both, so or rather two consecutive in-breaths, are they very similar or are they different? So if I am representing in-breaths using this fingers and the out-breaths using the other fingers, there may be little differences. Not all five fingers are similar. Likewise, all in-breaths are not exactly similar. All out-breaths are not exactly similar. There may be slight differences. Now we are sort of investigating to find out these differences. So Buddha is asking, Digang vasa santo, digang asa samiti pajanati, rasang vasa santo, rasa samiti pajanati. So likewise, he is telling. So you know, okay, right now there's the in-breath going on. Compared to the previous in-breath, this appears like little longer. Compared to the previous in-breath, this appears like shorter because it finished early. Then you have a little memory about previous in-breath. So you understand, okay, this is shorter than the previous one. Similar to the out-breath. This out-breath is longer than the previous out-breath, or this out-breath is shorter than the previous out-breath. So likewise, you have some idea about the differences between two consecutive in-breaths or two consecutive out-breaths. So actually, as you continue this process, your mindfulness really refine. Because when your mind distracts, you can't find out these subtle details. You have to be well concentrated, well aligned, behave in a way to facilitate this process. So therefore, in the next stage, Buddha categorically asks us to restrain ourselves. Don't move your head, don't move your body, don't change the posture. Just keep your attention at the nostril. Don't keep any doubts. Now the mind is going to further refine. Mindfulness is going to further refine, sharpen. So Buddha asks us to restrain ourselves just to facilitate this process. Sabbakaya parisangniti asa sissamiti sikkhati. The term sikkhati particularly emphasizes that we need to restrain ourselves. We need to support this ongoing process. We should not have any doubts or any kind of disturbing processes going on. Rather, we need to allow the process to happen in a very natural way. At the same time, we are facilitating this whole process. Now, he is asking to see whether the in-breath, how this in-breath begins. Is it immediately jumps like a spike, or is it slowly increasing like a bell curve? So typically that is the nature. So it's like a bell curve where in-breath begins in a very slow fashion, in a very slowly it's increasing. Then it is reaching some kind of a threshold. We can actually feel that area, the middle part, and then it's disappearing. That is the waxing part. That is the disappearing part. That is the end. And at the after the end, it is not immediately that we begin the out-breath, but there's a little pause, little gap. That also we can feel. And then the out-breath also begins very slowly. Then it is increasing. That means the intensity increases. We feel it properly. That's the middle part of the out-breath. And then again, it starts to disappear. It starts to fade away. And that is the end of the out-breath. And then the next in-breath also not immediately starts, but there's a little gap, little pause. Now after that gap, then we can feel the next in-breath begins. So if you are able to maintain your attention throughout this whole process, throughout this whole cycle, that means you have totally given up the whole world. Not only yourself, just everything you have to give up and simply be content with the breath. So this is the kind of a beauty where, I mean, it is not necessary to call all the problems and the issues, all news and all these so many, you know, garbage in our mind. Simply you can keep them aside for a while, at least for 10-15 minutes. When and you enjoy this whole process. So and more you do this, and you will understand what a kind of a release. As all this time I was holding all these issues in my mind, maybe a lot of problems in your family, a lot of issues at your office, maybe health issues around the world, a lot of threats, economy problems, and all so many problems. But at the moment, you're keeping all of them aside, and just be aware of the breath. Don't think this is, we are trying to escape from the world. We are trying to strengthen our mind to really face the world in the future. So here is a kind of a training. We are strengthening the spiritual qualities in order to tackle various issues maybe we ourselves may go through, and we also get through the environment, through the outside, that also we can tackle when our spiritual qualities, which our mental qualities, are very strong. So therefore, don't think that we are trying to escape from the world. Rather, we are now trying to train our mind to cope with these all issues. Now, for the time being, therefore, anyway, just let go all the problems, all the issues, and come back to yourself. And just be with the breath. And enjoying the breath. As I said, as it breathes in, so we feel like we are nourishing ourselves. As breathing out, it's like we are releasing all the stresses. We are releasing all the tensions. And slowly we know this is the beginning of the in-breath, this is the middle, this is the end. So this is a little gap. This is the beginning of the out-breath, this is the middle, this is the end. That's a gap. This is the beginning of the in-breath, this is the middle, this is the end. This is the gap. This is the beginning of the out-breath, this is the middle, this is the end. So likewise, so we are simply very quietly, very silently, very sort of happily enjoying the whole process. Actually, as your mind starts to appreciate this whole process, a lot of joy is going to arise. You feel kind of light. You feel lighter in your body, and your mind concentrates. And even if your mind distracts, it may not stay outside longer. And the mind itself will understand outside is like burning, but inside is cooling. So it immediately come back to the cooling inside. It will start to stay with breathing. So as a result, more and more breathing will calms down, and almost it going to disappear. Now you can't find out whether it is in-breath or out-breath. To that level, it has become so subtle, almost like not perceivable, unperceivable, because it has become very, very refined, very, very subtle breath is now going on. And you need to facilitate this. Don't change your posture. Don't encourage any doubts. Don't think that you won't get enough oxygen. Just allow the body to calm down. So that Buddha emphasized telling, Pasam bhayankaya sankharam asasi samiti sikkhati. Yeah, you got to facilitate this calming down process. You allow the body to calm down. You allow the breathing to calm down and just enjoy it. Just relax. Now you very much like take off your hand. Let the meditation happen by itself. Don't put your hand too much. Don't exert too much effort. Now it's a kind of an art. You know, I mean, if you want to sort of allow a process to happen by itself, then maybe at the beginning you need to give some energy from your side. You may need to little give some control. That's all. After that, when the system runs by itself, you need to take the back seat and simply enjoy the ride. Very much like that. So in the meditation also, don't expect that you need to control and you have to manipulate and all these things. Rather, let the meditation evolve by itself. Then it is very natural. Then it is very beautiful, rather than you trying to manipulate it. And at this stage, then the whole process sort of blossoms. Kind of a calming down happens. The body feel very tranquil. The whole mind feel tranquil. The body feel sort of lighter. And each breath gives you a lot of happiness, kind of a joy. And all these things are possible. And the next stage is you feel a lot of rapture. There are sort of happy feelings may sort of even overwhelm the whole body. That is also possible. I mean, there may be slight happiness, slight enjoyment can happen. Like sort of time to time sort of goosebumps can happen on your body. Kind of massaging kind of feelings can happen. Or sort of whole body feels like you are sort of submerged on water, or sort of have kind of pleasurable feelings pervading all around yourself. All these things are possible. And different levels of happiness, different levels of pleasurable feelings are there. And these things can happen. Actually, we are not creating them. Don't expect to create them. And while we are going through them, don't expect them. If you expect, they won't happen. Now, the beauty of Buddha's teaching is, if you are craving for something, it won't happen. But more you let go, things will happen. So that's the beauty. So therefore, the whole process is a kind of a letting go process. So you allow things to happen. You take the back seat and enjoy. You take the back seat and allow the meditation to take you on the journey. And at that time, the beautiful balance is there. Then this all beautiful feelings, pleasurable feelings can appear. Like, as I said, kind of massaging kind of experiences, sort of various happy feelings, kind of waves coming and going, kind of all pervading type of pressure, different things are there. So such possibilities are there. I am giving different experiences just to give you an idea, and for you, different experiences are possible. And in one session, one type of experience is possible. In another session, another type of experience is possible. And this stage, Buddha says, Piti patisangvedi asasi samiti sikkhati. Piti patisangvedi asasi samiti sikkhati. While being aware of all these pleasurable feelings, you simply continue your meditation. There may be sort of pleasurable feelings are going on, but you are not disturbing them. You are not trying to stop them. You are not trying to control them. And you are not sort of greedily attached to them either. But rather you allow them to happen. You simply on the back seat. You allow the driver to take you for a journey. You simply being in the back seat and enjoy the whole journey. That's it. If you are trying to put your hand, you are disturbing the process. So simply enjoy. So various pleasurable feelings are going on. You are simply aware of them. Don't attach to them. Don't refuse them. Don't think that you are not deserving them. You really deserve them. And if they are not happening, don't expect them either. Because if there are no sort of pleasurable feelings, what is mostly available are the neutral feelings. They are really calmed down. Your mind is in a kind of a balance, not going up and down, but rather in the middle. So keeping your mind in the middle is not a harm. That is where we actually ultimately, mostly we are going to, to reach. Say these the pleasurable feelings are temporary. Actually, that is enjoyable and encouraging for a beginner. But don't expect them to happen every day. And more you mature your practice, so these pleasurable feelings even disappear. And most of the time, your practice will end up in the neutral field. So that is the region where the wisdom going to grow. So therefore, don't expect everybody that I every day have to feel all these pleasurable feelings. It is not. But the typical growth in meditation will happen in this way, where once the mind calms down and when breath disappears almost, then these kind of pleasurable feelings can happen. And when they happen, we are not attached to them and we are not rejecting them. It's simply being aware that they are pleasurable feelings. They are not mine, they are not me, they are not myself, but they are simply pleasurable feelings. So this is the fifth stage of Anapanasati Sutta, where Buddha explains it in 16 stages. So this is the fifth stage where the whole body and mind is going through various feelings and we are simply allowing it to happen. We take the back seat and observe it. We take the back seat and understand they happen and they are pleasurable feelings. They are painful feelings. They are neutral feelings. So therefore, understanding these different types of feelings is under the category of Vedananupassana. You know, in Vedananupassana, Buddha asks us to see. Vedanasu Vedananupassi Viharati. The yogi is aware of various types of feeling tones. So when happy feelings are happening, he knows now is a happy feeling. When there's a painful feeling happens, he knows it's a painful feeling. When there's a neutral feeling happens, it's a neutral feeling. So likewise, he is very much disengaged from the process. He looks at different types of feelings without any kind of an attachment, without any kind of considering them as me or mine. But they are pleasurable feelings. They are painful feelings. They are neutral feelings. So one understands feeling as feelings. That's it. Yeah, they are not yours. They are not someone else's. They happen due to various causes and conditions. And you allow them to happen. And you simply, like an outsider, you simply observe. And you are not disturbing the process either. You are not neglecting any of these. You are not trying to escape from them. You're simply being aware of any of these and just enjoying them. Just and when the painful feeling happens, when you are simply enduring them. So likewise, either you enjoy or simply endure without attached to them, without rejecting them. So this is the fifth stage in Anapanasati Sutta. Buddha explains Anapanasati in a way to develop four foundations of mindfulness. So with that, actually, I conclude today's sermon or what to say, kind of the teaching. So if you have, any question related to today's discussion or guided sitting session or what I have mentioned today, or maybe already Chatu may be ready with the written questions. So I will open the discussion now for everyone.
Avasarai Bhante. Because I think we've actually received a lot of new people, maybe double the amount we usually have. So I'll just do a quick refresher for everyone. So there's a couple of ways you can submit questions. You can raise your hand and you can speak directly, or you can send me a message and I can read it out, or you can do it very anonymously and you can submit. I'll put a link up on the chat and that'll come through to me. So we've received already 5 questions. So I'll get started with that. Question number 1, mindful walking. Bhante, in my walking practice this week, I have noticed there's more to observing walking than how the foot lands. Please correct me if noting this is not useful. I noticed how when one heel lands, a fraction later, the other heel lifts off the ground. When the entire foot is off the ground, I could note the angle as it moved forward to take the next step. In order to note these things, I observed that the pace of my walk slowed a bit. Also, instead of my feet being hip length apart, they were landing closer to the center of my body, as though walking on a line painted on the ground. This also helped my balance. Is it okay to observe these things? That's the end.
Could you repeat the last couple of sentences, Chatu?
In order to note these things, I observed that the pace of my walk slowed a bit. Also, instead of my feet being hip length apart, they were landing closer to the center of my body, as though walking on a line painted on the ground. This also helped my balance. Is it okay to observe these things?
Yeah, actually this is quite natural, because at the beginning we typically start like the usual walking. Say suppose you are a typical fast walker, then we may even walk fast, doesn't matter. But more you start to see details, your walking speed, your pace of walking may little reduce. So you may be walking in a slow pace. It's all right, completely all right, because you are now looking at finer details of your toes, finer details at your, say, heels. So these are possibilities and these are quite normal. So therefore, I mean, as you have mentioned, it is then it becomes like you are walking on a rule. You are walking on a line where you are sort of, it appears like kind of artificial walking. But if you understand your mindfulness is improving and various subtle details are available for you and the walking is happening in a constructive way, in a way to progress your mindfulness, you can continue. Even though it is extremely slow, nothing to worry. Rather than worrying about the pace or speed of the walking, try to understand various phenomena. Say, for example, when your leg touching the ground, maybe you can feel the hardness. You can feel the gross roughness. You can feel the heat. You can feel the movement. And all these things are element characteristics. And try to recognize each one of them in a clear manner, in a distinct manner. How different it is. Each and every different characteristics you are well knowing. So this actually will calm down yourself, and you need to quieten the mind. You can't do it while the mind is talking. You have to quieten the mind, and then you have to precisely keep your attention at each and every this phenomena, and then only you can understand how each and every phenomena, how they are starting, how they begins, and how long it will last, and how quickly they will pass away. And then immediately you go to the next phenomena, how it is arising, how it is changing, and how it passes away. Then again the next phenomena. Next phenomena is available, readily available for you. And you have to be very vigilant, very sharp. And your attention is exactly on the necessary place. So these things you can't do in a sort of a high speed manner, but you can do when the body happens in a slow pace. So therefore, what you are experiencing is quite normal. You can continue your practice.
Question number two. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, much merits if you can explain a bit about how to identify the difference between being mindful and having concentration. We hear that first, we should try to be mindful and develop a practice, and at some point, concentration will develop. How can we identify these two qualities of mind as and where it arises in our awareness? Thank you, Bhante. That's the end.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have explained a little bit in, during the today's sermon. We are related to the breath. At the beginning, we are simply aware of different characteristics of the breath. Now, whether it is happening in breath, whether it is out breath, whether the in breath is longer, whether the out breath is longer, whether it is shorter. Now we are sort of introducing some concentration to it. So then we understand what are the differences between two consecutive in-breaths, two consecutive out-breaths. Now we are further refining our mindfulness. And then we understand whether this is the beginning of the in-breath, this is the middle, this is the end. There's a gap. The beginning of the out-breath, this is the middle, this is the end. There's a gap. This is the beginning of the in-breath, So likewise, now we are well focused. Our attention is fairly focused now. Then as a result, all breathing process calms down. The breathing becomes very subtle. And even the breath disappears, the mind stays at the nostril. And this is where we can say now mind has concentrated, fairly concentrated at the nostril. Assume that your mind is kind of an energy. It's almost scattered everywhere. So this breathing process helps us to sort of collect that sort of dissipated energy to one place. So in order to do this, we have used various exercises. So this whole breathing is kind of a tool to accumulate this scattered energy. Now the whole energy, the mental energy, is very much collected at the nostril. And then even the breath disappears, this collected mind, the concentrated mind, can be kept at the nostril for some time. So it's again a challenge. I mean, when breath disappears, is it possible for us to maintain our attention at the nostril? At the beginning, it's difficult because the mind requires kind of a gross object to maintain its attention. But now, kind of a challenge, because the breath is not gross. It's almost like unnoticeable. Then your mind can go to the past or to the future, and you can even fall asleep. And these kind of sort of challenges are there. These kind of obstacles are there. But if you are aware of these obstacles, and if you are able to overcome these obstacles, then your mind can concentrate. And now what you need to understand is, now even with a very slight object, very refined object, your mind is well concentrated at the nostril. And there's a difference. And you can simply stay like that for some time. Say 15 minutes, you can simply keep your attention at the nostril. That's it. Your mind does not like to go out. Typically at the beginning, mind does not like to stay here because it's utterly boring. There is no happiness, no pleasure, utterly boring. You feel you are nodding, you are feeling sleepy, and all these issues are there. But when the mind concentrates, it doesn't like to go out. So you can understand the difference. Beginning, it doesn't like to stay here. It likes to go out. But when mind concentrates, so then mind likes to stay here without going out. Even if it go out, it quickly comes back to nostril. It quickly comes back to breath. So this is where we can understand, okay, now mind has fairly collected, fairly concentrated. So then we can understand, okay, there's a quality of mind called concentration, called the collectedness, kind of one-pointedness. So this actually indicates the samadhi, the concentration, the concentrated mind, the collected mind. So the nature is where you can locate it, you can point it to the place where you want. Yeah.
Question number 3. This is sitting mindfulness. Dear Bhante, today, as I was doing my sitting mindfulness, I tried to practice what you talked about last week. My breath was very refined and I could almost not feel my breath or my body. I felt like I was going into a space which was very calm and peaceful. I started to get anxious and scared because I could not feel anything. But I told myself it will be okay and I just kept observing. Normally, when I get scared, I can feel my heartbeat. But I could not feel that. Instead, I felt a tightened chest. I kept observing and eventually I felt my breath again. I kept going into states of very refined breath and then back to gross breath. My entire session today was this process. I could, however, still hear cars going outside, noises inside the house, etc. My body, however, just felt like one big mass. Today, I did not feel the boredom I normally feel when my breath gets refined. Thank you, Bhante, for your guidance. That's the end.
Yeah, so basically now mind is started to calm down. Mind has started to collect. So therefore, allow this to happen again and again. Now, this is just the beginning. You need to facilitate this process next time as well. Next time, go prepared. If you expect too much, that itself can become a hindrance. So you simply allow the process, allow things to happen. And when it is happening, you got to facilitate it. So don't encourage any doubts. Don't change your posture. And don't introduce a different object. Rather, keep your attention at the nostril and be with the breath, subtle breath. And even if it disappears, just keep your attention at the nostril for some time. Because this concentration, this samadhi is something we need. Actually, when the mind is well collected, well concentrated, it actually facilitates the vipassana. Because if you have a blunt kind of a knife, blunt kind of a tool, you can't do the job properly. It's very much like that. When the mind is well collected, well sharpened, sort of well concentrated, it's like a very sharp tool. With a sharp tool, you can do the job properly, accurately, very precisely. Similarly, we need to sharpen the mindfulness. We need to sharpen the concentration. And this is what it is happening. So, and continue your practice. And more you got to familiarize. And the one thing, the progress can be measured is, assume that at the moment you need 45 minutes to concentrate. Later with your practice, you can concentrate your mind within maybe 40 minutes. Maybe after a couple of weeks, maybe within 30 minutes, you can reach this stage. So this is how the progress can be measured. Yeah.
Question number 4, sitting mindfulness. I am an absolute beginner. How to overcome the initial pain threshold in sitting position? Examples are pelvic area, calf muscle, etc. That's the end.
Yeah, actually, that's why one thing is find a good cushion. I mean, you put a good cushion where it gives enough sort of comfort. Don't go for a very rough surface. Just sit on a very comfortable cushion, and that is one thing. Another thing is, if it is too painful, don't sit for a long time. Rather, gradually increase it. Say at the first session you are sitting 10 minutes for 1 week. That's the end. I mean, after 10 minutes you may go for a walk. Doesn't matter. Then another week you are staying sitting for 15 minutes. So you are increasing another just 5 minutes. So you simply have to endure just 5 minutes. Maybe a little painful, doesn't matter. You can bear it. So now 15 minutes you are sitting. Maybe after a week, maybe you can sit for 20 minutes. Now we are sitting comfortably and maybe little pains happen, but you can bear it and just for 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes. So likewise, 5 minutes, you can increase. And maybe within a couple of months, definitely you can sit for one hour. So likewise, you need to facilitate this process. You have to familiarize with this posture. And the body will learn it. So the sitting cross-legged is not something used to the body. So therefore, it may appear like artificial, it may appear like difficult at the beginning, but later, because of your practice, your continuous practice, so slowly, slowly, body starts to feel comfortable. Body starts to get seasoned onto this posture. So therefore, don't worry. Slowly, slowly, gradually, you can increase the time and find a good cushion as well. And this is how we need to overcome the painful issues, pain. And on the other thing is now, if you understand at any particular time that the concentration is now growing, the mindfulness is well established, and you should not change the posture, you should not get up right now, then you do a little adjustment to your posture and continue your practice. Because at the beginning, you can't handle pain. Later, we can handle pain, but right now, you are not yet capable enough to handle pain, to take be front. I mean, you can't go face to face with it. So at the moment, you simply escape from the pain simply by changing your posture. That's another technique you can use. Yeah.
Question number five. This is both walking and sitting. Dear Bhante, I would like to ask two specific questions about how to manage the situation when mind drifts away from the mindful object. For example, sensations on the sole of the foot. So this is the first one. Even with a lot of effort and after many attempts, I could not be aware of the exact moment the mind drifts away how mind drifts to something else. I only get to know that I am with thoughts or listening to something after it happens, and sometimes within seconds or maybe after several minutes. I don't know how to catch or to get to know this drifting away process, how it works. Is this something we should work on to improve? And the second question is...
We'll go one by one. Okay. So basically, I mean, we can't, as you have clearly mentioned, you can't immediately find out when mind drifts, because it's a kind of a quick process. I mean, immediately mind jumps without our knowledge. Once it has gone outside, only we know, okay, if it is not with the foot, it has gone to something else. So it's maybe after some time only we understand that, because our mindfulness is not yet developed. But don't worry, simply when you are aware, maybe after a couple of minutes, doesn't matter, when you are aware that you are not on your foot but at something else, so at that time don't encourage that thinking kind of proliferation. Rather come back to yourself, come back to the foot. Assume your right foot is now touching the ground. Very much like nothing has happened, you come back to the right foot. Don't waste your time further regretting about what has happened. Don't think various about theories and books and all these things at that time. Just immediately, as soon as possible, come back to the right foot, because right foot is right at the moment touching the ground. And then you continue. Maybe another couple of minutes you are continuing. As much as possible, you are getting the maximum benefit. When mind is with you, when you are capable of establishing mindfulness, take the maximum advantage from that. That is where we are enhancing, we are improving mindfulness. When mind is with us, we are taking the maximum benefit. We are taking the maximum advantage from that. After that, assume that again mind drifts, and only after a couple of minutes only you know. That's the natural way. That's very natural. And after that, again come back. Don't regret, don't blame yourself. Again come back. Assume at this moment your left leg is touching the ground, and start. Right? Keep your attention on the left leg and you continue. So this is how we need to sort of encourage the mind when it is with ourselves. You can appreciate the mind when it is with yourself. But you are not giving marks or giving appreciation when it has gone to something else. Rather, you simply come back to yourself when mindfulness has established and take the maximum advantage. And this way, more and more, you gain the skill to keep your attention where you want. Now, you have mentioned you don't know exactly how to keep your attention, but it's a kind of a skill. It's like, suppose you are using the bow and arrow. If you are trying bow and arrow, definitely none of us can immediately hit the target. It may go all around the bullseye. But with our sort of exercise, with our training, and on one day we may be able to hit the bullseye. Like that, even the meditation, even in walking meditation, we may not be able to exactly, precisely aim where we want. But with time, with our practice, we will gain that skill. So you simply continue. All these skills will be slowly developed.
So this is the second part. The technique I use to bring the mind back is to check if I am aware of the sensations of the sole of the foot. If I do it with a lot of vigilance and effort, I observe the mind snaps back immediately and stays with the walking process. If I do it gently, I observe the mind comes back as drifting and slowly comes back and settles with the walking process. Synchronizing with the walking process. Is it beneficial to observe how the distracted mind comes back and the return process? Lots of merit for your guidance and insights, Bande. That's the end.
Yeah, both are good. Actually, basically, at the beginning, we may sort of control the process. We interfere the process. We understand, okay, now mind has drifted. So we intentionally take it back to the soul. But later, once you have confidence, it may not stay there outside for longer. After a while, it may come back. Because the mind has understood now, staying with your soul, staying with your feet is comfortable. It's not burning. Being outside is sort of burning. Being outside is stressful. So once that understanding is with the mind, you don't need to control your mind. You don't need to immediately pull it back. Rather, you simply allow it to happen. You understand how it is coming back. You can even observe how it is coming back. Then it is kind of a natural process. So the whole meditation becomes sort of evolving in the natural pace rather than you are sort of manipulating. Actually, in the beginning, we need to do a little bit of manipulating. Doesn't matter. But later, actually, as with our developed mindfulness, once we have some confidence, we can let the process to evolve naturally. Then only if it doesn't happen, we just have to put our hand. We just have to interfere. Otherwise, we can let the process happen by itself and we simply watch it. And as you said, when it is happening like that, then it is fairly synchronizing with the process. The bodily process, the physical process, and the mental process get synchronized well. So that is the kind of the balance ultimately what we need. There are the two processes. Both processes are well synchronized and happens in a natural pace. So that is the sort of least frictional path what we have to try. And when it is available, you can continue. So this beautiful balance may not happen every time. When it's happening, you can encourage that.
Question number 6 is a general question. How does meditation help with concentration and focusing in terms of studying? Does it help to release stress and focus on tasks? That's the end.
Yeah, definitely. Now, say for example, while you are studying, suppose you are reading a book and you want to memorize the content. Assume like that. And now suppose you are reading a couple of lines. And after reading a couple of lines, assume that your mind thinks about the past. Some incident happened at your college and various arguments and all these things. Now the mind is not with the book, but with that past memory. And assume that you were thinking about that for 5 minutes. And after that, again, you forcefully taking your attention back to the book. Again, you read. Now you have forgotten what is the content of what you have read. Now you are again reading. Okay, couple of lines, another couple of lines. Again, it is taking back to the past. Maybe another couple of minutes you are spending ruminating. Again, you come back to the book. What do you think? Is this kind of studying effectful or effective? Or this mostly we are very much like not studying. Yeah, even though the book is in front of you, you are not really reading it. Your mind is with something else. So the mindfulness helps us to just to keep your attention more and more with the book, more and more with the content what we are reading. And you are well focused. Your attention is totally with it. You are well focused and mind is well concentrated and less distractions. So this is actually a kind of a side benefit that we can get through meditation. Because more you meditate, more you develop mindfulness, these are sort of side benefits that we can gain and utilize in our studies. And on the other hand, more you mindfully study, then more and more content will be deposited in your memory. Because less disturbances, and you are in a very balanced attitude, in a pleasant mood, and your mind is fairly be with the present moment. And therefore, the necessary environment for the memory to develop or memory to continue is there. So the more and more information, if you want to memorize, so readily you can memorize. You can simply deposit. You can simply write to your memory. And later at your exam, you can again retrieve your information. Very much like you have written on a hard disk. You can simply now read the information quickly. Readily the information is available. So therefore, I mean, for studies, it is immensely helpful. And this is not something that I am just telling for you to encourage, but these are known facts. And just to give you some examples, you know, in Nissarnavanaya, I mean, respected Bhante started this in 2016. And you know, the Mithrigala is kind of an village area. So the schools are not that, town type of schools. They are kind of village schools. And typically no one passes the scholarship. You know, the fourth at the grade five, they have a scholarship. Typically no one passes. No one, and mostly they get failed. But once the Satipasada is introduced in Nissarnavanaya, now every Monday they are coming and the little children are encouraged to do this. And teachers are also coming and they go and introduce mindfulness to their colleges. So now this Verhara College, the one close by college, now the first time last year, the previous year, they got several students who went through the exam. They passed the exam. So these are some known facts that the development of the mindfulness actually will help your studies.
Bhante, I actually have maybe another 5 questions. Is it okay if we go a bit over time today? Do you have time?
Yes.
It's okay? Okay. So question number 7. This is walking and sitting. Venerable Bhante, during my sitting and walking practices, I have been getting some questions arising in my mind, which sometimes confuse me, sometimes make me uncomfortable, and other times I can't let go, and I think it gets in the way of my practice. Some of the examples are as follows. During walking and observing my footsteps, I wonder how, despite my foot being so far away from my mind, how is it that I can observe things about my feet so clearly? And the second one is, sitting...
Wait, Chatu, we'll go one by one.
Okay.
Yeah. So actually, that is where the concentration is operating. I mean, even though... I mean, this is one presumption that you are going. You think that your mind is on your head. So, and you are now concentrating on your leg, and you are now questioning yourself how the mind on your head is now being on your leg. Now, it is not how the consciousness operates, and the consciousness is available throughout the body, and all 5 senses are, not only 5 senses, even including the mind, all 6 senses are with the consciousness: eye consciousness, ear consciousness, tongue consciousness, nose consciousness, body consciousness, and mind consciousness. So therefore, when your mind concentrates, as your mindfulness develops, wherever it is necessary, you can locate your attention. You can simply concentrate any place. But don't think that it is kind of a mistake or it is impossible or something like that. It is possible. Any place throughout your body, you can concentrate. And even outside your body, you can concentrate. Yeah.
And the second observation was, during sitting meditation, when comparing 2 breaths, I feel it like a sound wave in my mind. It is a different process compared to watching a focal point like my nostril. Where is this thought? I think I'm trying to understand how things are happening. Why is this so? Is it similar to the doubt you have referred to in the past? Should I simply let go these questions, or can I try to understand them? That's the end.
Kind of sound wave. What is the term that you have used?
Sound waves, like sort of music, I guess. And then there's a wave, a ripple that goes out.
In the mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, these are normal. I mean, the more your mindfulness develop, so these ripples and going ups and downs will reduce. Don't expect that to happen immediately. Slowly, slowly, those disturbances will reduce and your mind comes back to the middle region. Assume that it's like a waveform, it's going up and down. More mindfulness develop, more insights are arising. So these ups and downs become less and less. You are able to maintain your sort of demeanor, your sort of attitude, your mentality on the middle. Even when sort of happy, joyful events are there, you are not going up. You are not getting elated. Same time when certain sorrowful things, sad events are happening, you are not getting drowned. You are not going depressed. Rather, you can maintain at the middle. This is, I mean, common within even within a session, this is possible. Even within a session, you can go some ups and again downs, but try to be in the middle. The middle is the most neutral and most stable position. That is what Buddha has encouraged. So just to give you some theory, if you refer Indriya Bhavana Sutta, Buddha says, I mean, whenever mind jumps to some happy feelings, just come back to the middle. Whenever mind jumps to the painful feelings, mind, I mean, it is not something that naturally happen, but due to some experience, assume that you got painful, you become sorrowful. Don't be there, just come to the middle. So likewise, Buddha encouraged to be in the middle, because the middle is the most comfortable, most reliable, stable position. It's the, very much like the home position of our mind. Yeah. Chatu, you can go to the next. He has muted.
Sorry, apologize. question number 8. Venerable Bhante, in your discussions, you have been talking about progression with regards to observation of the breath. Is there a similar progression for development in walking meditation? That's the end.
Yeah, true. That is also there. Say, for example, just to take you to the very basics, assume that you could only observe five steps. After that, your mind distracts and lost in thoughts for, say, 5 minutes. After 5 minutes only, the mind re-establish mindfulness. And again, now you are going with the steps. Another, say, 5 steps. But later, after 1 week's time, assume now you can go for 8 steps. And after 8 steps, your mind distracts and stays there only for 3 minutes. Distractions, rumination, everything happened just for 3 minutes and returns. And then more, you can go for 8 steps again. So this indicates kind of a progress. After another week, assume that you can go for 15 steps. And even if the mind distracts after 15 steps, it may come immediately. After a couple of seconds, it comes back. So this indicates an improvement. Yeah, you yourself can measure how much mindfulness improved, grown because of this practice. Actually, this is a verifiable thing. It is not that you don't need to go and ask from someone, but you yourself can verify because of this practice, the mindfulness has improved. Concentration has improved. Now mind does not like to stay longer outside, but rather wherever I want, now I can keep the attention. So this is the kind of a skill that we are developing, and you can measure it. You can experience the growth. Now after that, after some time, you don't need to interfere the process. As I said in a previous answer, so So the mental process and the bodily process are well synchronized. The bodily process is going on, mental process also properly coupled with it, well synchronized with it, and you simply have to allow the process to happen. You are simply now observing each and every step very closely. You are finding out more and more subtle details. Now the mindfulness has further improved, and this is another stage. So likewise, you can measure your progress, even in walking meditation.
Question number 9. Teruan Saranai. After I calm my mind and focus on the breath, at times my mind starts to wander. At that time, is it good to focus back on the breath immediately, or should I start focusing on my body, that is feeling the feet or my back, doing this first and then getting back to my breath? That's the end.
Yeah, both are all right. Actually, coming back to the body also helps you to calm down, to earth yourself, and then slowly refine. You can keep your attention back to the breath. So it's a kind of a refining your attention, kind of fine-tuning your attention. But if you think that once your mind distracted, immediately it's coming to breath is difficult, you can come to the body, because body is kind of a large object where you can kind of an area where you can sort of capture your attention. And once you are established on your body, you can slowly refine your mindfulness by keeping your attention on breath. So that may be the most easiest approach. But if you understand now, even though mind has distracted, it is not much disturbed. It has able to maintain its concentration. If so, you can immediately come back to breath, because no much harm has happened because of the distraction. Therefore, you can immediately come back to the breath.
Question 10. Dear Bhante, I begin my sitting meditation by bringing my mind to the body. Then I bring my mind to the nose. I first begin the breathing by controlling the breath and identifying the in and out breath. I then let go of the breath and feel the in and out breath, which is mostly soft. While this is happening, my back begins to bend, but I do not give any thought to it. After some time, the breath becomes soft and softer until it becomes non-existent or very non-existent. There is a brief moment where nothing happens while my mind is at the nostril. My body then starts to get chaotic and then tries to find the breath by breathing harder and harder. But as I look at the breath, despite the body being chaotic, the breath is non-existent. After a while, my breath comes back to my body and I feel the breath again and I stop my meditation. Thank you, Bhante, for your venerable advice. That's the end.
Yeah, actually, if you can avoid any kind of chaotic experience on your body, if you are making it purposely, you simply have to avoid that. So that is where Buddha emphasized by introducing the term sikkhati. Sikkhati means we got to train ourselves. This is a kind of a training. Don't expect everything to happen within a day. It may not happen. It may take some time. It's a kind of a training, and it may take some time, and you can give time. Don't be in a hurry. Simply take your time, and when breath calms down, and next time you go prepared, because you understand, okay, after 20 minutes, after 30 minutes, okay, the breath calms down. Breath almost disappears. And last time I got panicked when it was happening. But now I know this is going to happen and I don't need to worry about it. And I am not going to force breathe this time. I'm just keeping the mind as it is. This is a kind of a training. I am now restraining myself. After the whole session reaches 30 minutes, okay, now breath has disappeared. Now I am restraining myself not to force breathe, not to change the posture, not to make any adjustments, but rather simply allowing things to happen as it is. It's kind of a restrainment. Therefore, continue your practice a couple of sessions again and again. So you can, with your practice or continuous practice, you can overcome this problem and try to understand what is the necessary amount of energy you need. I mean, as I mentioned, we need to adjust the energy. If you are not adjusting energy, then you can't run fast. Say, for example, if when you are driving, so on a lower gear, we may be spending a lot of energy on a lot of fuel. But on a higher gear, even though the vehicle is moving fast, we don't need to give a lot of energy, a lot of fuel, because the vehicle itself has its own momentum. So similarly, the meditation, as it is catching up its own momentum, we don't need to exert enough, lot of effort, because the mind is now growing. The mindfulness is improving. Concentration has fairly improved. The meditation itself has gained its energy. So we don't need to exert too much energy. Rather, we have to reduce energy. So you let the process happen. You just come back to the back seat. Don't interfere the driver. And let the driver to take the vehicle. So this is a kind of an art we need to learn. And then the process will naturally evolve. And we need to rest. You just relax. Yeah.
Question number 11, mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, as a beginner, when in the early stages of breathing meditation, is it okay to visualize how your face or nostril looks like in order to help facilitate where the physical feeling of breathing is taking place? Is that a distraction that must be discarded later? Thank you, Bhante. That's the end.
Yeah, I think we don't need to encourage that kind of visualization, because breathing, the anapanasati, is something we are overcoming all visualizations, overcoming all signs, sanya. Because signs, perceptions, sanya, and all these things are mental illusions. Mentally, we are making them. But the meditation helps us to understand that illusion and simply to let that go and allow the mind to become very clear and clean, very pure. So therefore, I don't encourage that kind of visualized kind of environment. Rather, try to feel it. I mean, if you can't feel breathing, just try to experience your body. And there may be other processes available, like, say, rising and falling of the abdomen. That may be another process available. So if you can't feel breathing, you can try to experience this rising and falling, which is comparatively kind of a gross process. So therefore, that is another option. So I don't encourage this kind of visualizations.
Question number 12. This is the last question, Bhante. It's a continuation from previous question about pain we had earlier. Dear Bhante, in addition to the questions asked about dealing with pain during sitting meditation, I have found that body scanning helps. Once I focus on parts of the body from head to toe and back to head, and then right side, then left side of the body, the pain goes away. Do you recommend doing body scanning at the start of meditation practice? Thank you, with metta. That's the end.
Yeah, that is possible. No problem. Because body scanning helps us to well ground ourselves, come back to ourselves. So we are basically within the body. So it is very much like we are having a kind of fence. Assume that we have a wild animal to tame. So we are kind of around, we are putting it under a kind of a limited area, and we have a strong fence. And within this limited area, within the fence margin, now the wild animal is moving, because we can't immediately put it into a cage. You have to slowly tame it. So similarly, we can allow the mind to simply be with the body, and body scanning is a kind of a beautiful process to facilitate this process. So therefore, you can do that whenever it is useful.
Thank you, Bhante. So that was the last question. Because we've gone over time, I won't ask for any more. And I'll pass to Sarangaya for conclusion.
Okay, thank you, Taku. I think it's time to wrap up today's session. Hope you all had a good guided session, insightful Dhamma talk and Q&A time. And Bhante always emphasizes on practicing at home whenever we have some time to allocate. So if guided recordings help you, all previous sessions with extra time to practice are now uploaded to the monastery website. You can also refer the Q&A sessions as well. So on behalf of everyone, I would like to thank Bhante for the valuable session today and pay homage by saying sadhu, 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 and hope to see you all in 1 week's time. Theruvan Saranai.
Theruvan Saranai.